On my podcast, Aspire with Emma Greed, we share the keys to succeed in business and in life. Listen to and follow Aspire with Emma Greed and Odyssey podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
But hearing Kobe Altman say that, he's saying we just made it out that the expectations are the finals, right? Like, I heard that correctly. That was in his post season presser on Monday.
Yeah, meaning that we didn't have that expectation until they won 64 games.
Yeah, I don't believe that whatsoever. When you trade for Donovan Mitchell, that's what becomes your expectations, doesn't it? Well, whether inside and guys, like honest inside basketball guys, well, you gotta do this, that, the, yeah, but we, with your fan base, you make a trade for Donovan Mitchell like that, you're giving up 3 first-round picks. Like, hey, look at the other guy they traded 3 first-round picks for with the other team. Did they or did they not? Like, hey, this is a Super Bowl or bust move, and it ended up being bust, big time. Big time bust.
I had said in the past that it was kind of funny to me that every time the Cavs made a move for the GM and for the organization, with some fans, it was like a reset of the timeline. And I always kind of found that very interesting because obviously you could continue to make another, but like, what if they traded Evan Mobley tomorrow for Giannis? Does it start out, okay, now this is year one of this new Cavs team? So, you know, there's going to be some bumps in the road, and if they don't win the title, it's like, this has been 6 years of Darius Garland, right? It's been, oh, what, and if you think about it, they took Colin Sexton a year before. That, I thought, was the start of the rebuild, and we were going to do that on track. So I do think he's gotten the benefit of every time we just kind of repopulate what the window is.
He's kind of got the benefit of a lot of understanding that I don't think a lot of fan bases would give him. And I would even say, the nasty media. I would say that he's gotten the benefit of what a lot of the understanding media has been here.
Like, what's the Pacers window? What do we think of
now?
Because they've kind of blown up that whole thought because nobody had the Pacers on their radar.
Did they trade anybody?
As a contention? Well, Siakam was the trade they made.
Did they trade 3 first-round picks for Pascal Siakam? I'm asking. I'm being honest.
Well, I have to go back
and look sarcastic
at what that trade was. But
okay.
They obviously also, you know, traded for Tyrese Halliburton after the second year of his career. So he has now been in the league just as long as Darius Garland. Now he's been to 2 Eastern Conference finals, and now he's had heroics in the playoffs.
Well, did anybody, and they made those moves, and they're good moves, did anybody would... Like, would you consider a Donovan Mitchell trade years ago, 3 years ago, to bring him in? Was that a blockbuster trade?
Yes.
Would you consider the Pascal Siakam trade blockbuster or the Tyrese Halliburton trade?
I didn't think the Siakam was as much a blockbuster deal just because Siakam was not considered, you know, the type of superstar
player that can carry you.
They Donovan did was. Trade, so they traded a couple players. Bruce Bowen was one of them. But
Bruce Bowen.
Two 2024 first-round picks and a conditional 2026 first-round
pick. So that's 3 in so many ways. Okay, so that makes it even worse where you've had a team that's gone further than you with, I would put Donovan Mitchell ahead of Pascal Siakam. You've had a team that's gone further than you twice now and could very well go to the finals. So it still doesn't make it very
good.
Well,
and the Knicks used up so many
different... To make that argument.
You know, they made a bevy of trades. They kept... Even though they could have argued, and Knicks fans did, that, well, we've got our Villanova group. We've got the best chemistry of any of these teams in the Eastern Conference. The last thing we need to do is divvy that up. And then what did they do? What did they do? They made the OG Anunoby trade.
Yeah.
They made the Bridges trade.
Yeah.
They made the Karl Anthony Towns trade.
Yeah, like,
they
that's the big
not,
one.
They have not sat on their laurels at all. And now you can make the argument. Cavs have been unlucky with the injuries. They have. 2 consecutive years, they've been really banged up at the end of the year. But and obviously the Knicks were really banged up last year, at the end of the last year. But it is pretty incredible that the aggressive teams have been truly rewarded here in the last few years.
Well, remember, by the way,
Oklahoma City. Oklahoma City made deals. I mean, Hartenstein was not considered as big of a deal, but they made that one. Then the real big one, as you can see because of the matchups, has been the Alex Caruso for Josh Giddey deal. So they obviously did not, you know, divide up their main nucleus. But those were 2 role players that came in and have been really substantial.
Well, and that Karl Anthony Towns trade, I mean, that was a strong move. I mean, when you look at what they gave up and what they got back in him and trying to put those two together to make that thing work, like, these teams have made strong moves as well. And I think that you bring up the Knicks, like, they hold their team. that is as Jekyll and Hyde a fan base as you're going to see. They're going to celebrate in the street over winning the second round of an NBA series. And yeah, it is the defending champs, and it's Boston, and there's a rivalry there. But they will also, if they don't win this series, like once you've perceivably got past Indiana or once you got past Boston, if they don't win this series, then they're going to be calling for Tom Thibodeau's head. They're going to be wondering why you made these moves. Because remember, you got the other side of the coin where Julius Randle is also in the Western Conference Finals. So you have to deal with something like that. So I fail to say, well, we raised the expectations this year. I think a lot of people have had the expectations that it's a finals type of team with Donovan Mitchell. I couldn't have said that year one. But I think now it's like, hey man, you're gonna have to put up or shut up. And maybe there's another move that has to be made there. Maybe there has to be that. When you watched that Eastern Conference Finals game last night, what did you feel? Because I jotted down the emotions of what I thought.
Well, the first thing was jealousy. Honestly, I felt like we should have been on the stage this year, especially if you would have told me before the year that Boston,
I didn't feel that way.
Boston would be out. I'd be like, oh my God. All right, Cavs are 100%. I would have bet everything I own that the Cavs are in the Eastern Conference Finals if you would have told me before the season started that Boston wasn't going to be there. Would you guys? I would have mortgaged everything.
Totally. But I didn't feel jealousy. I ended up being more bitter with the Cavs and bitter about that. Like I have a lot of respect for Jalen Brunson and what the Knicks are doing, even though there's a lot of things about Knicks fans that you could be bothered by. I have a lot of respect for Indiana. I think Tyrese Halliburton, that's just good entertainment right there. That's healing right there. That's good work to go in there. And I know he thought he hit a three to win that basketball game, but to do the choke sign afterwards, I mean, that's just good solid stuff. That's two series in a row. You either won a game or perceivably you won that game last night, but you kept your team in it. And obviously they went on and they won in the overtime period. Like I have a lot of respect for that. And I'm going, what is missing from our team? And I just keep coming back to this answer of, well, there's only so many moves you really can make. And the one big move that you make, like I know it would be I'm not running to the table to make the move because I like the player that we talk about in Evan Mobley so much. And by the way, Jim Sarsky is going to join us coming up at 9:22 this morning from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel to see whether or not they would even want Evan Mobley up there. We won't keep him the entire segment, but I do want an answer from him and see whether or not they think as highly of Evan Mobley as we do here in Cleveland. It keeps coming back down to what are you going to do to get yourself to push yourself through that? Because I'm trying to figure out whether or not this is a fit issue or whether or not this really is a heart issue, whether or not this really is a toughness issue that we've been talking about here for the last week. And I think that that's what this series can do because I went to bed last night. They were up 14. The Knicks were. I was shocked when I woke up this morning that the Pacers had won that game. I mean, that's all heart. That's all toughness. And I look at you, I look at the Cavs, and I go, damn it, this team is better than them. What's not working here? And I keep arriving to an answer that I honestly, Anthony, I'm bothered by saying it because to me it just sounds like, nah, you're not watching the games the way you should. Like, I'm wondering myself, when we just say, guys aren't tough, they wanted it more. What are we saying? What are we saying?
Well, we are looking for terms.
And we
are looking for ways to explain why our team, which nobody thought could lose to Indiana, is sitting at home right now.
It's one thing for you and I to be sitting in a bar and say it. It feels cheap for me to say it behind a microphone. It feels like there needs to be something deeper. Like, I use Miles Turner as an example here. They were highlighting him yesterday and some of the things he did. Now, the Knicks, and I brought him up earlier, the Knicks shut him down in the second half. But he was one of the guys that highlighted. I go, you can tell who watches the NBA every night and who doesn't by what is said about other guys not named Tyrese Halliburton. Because you got to be a person who loves basketball, loves the NBA, or covers it entirely to know that much about the Indiana Pacers. I'm sorry. They are in, to me, a black hole of nothingness there in Indianapolis. No offense, guys. Sorry. None. Even though, boy, I said a lot of nasty stuff right there I don't mean to do. I just didn't pay attention. Like, I'm not one of those guys. And the people who know, like Channing Frye, who called out Jared Allen, he knows it. And credit to Channing Frye for knowing that. That's a guy who watches ball constantly and knows what he's watching, obviously, as a former NBA champion. And I see that. I go, is it enough for me to just say, well, we're soft? oh, we're not tough enough. But man, I watched these two teams. That was a cage match at certain times last night. And I thought, okay, Indiana or New York got the best of Indiana tonight. And I clicked it off, and they still weren't dead. They still weren't dead. I'm going, man, I believe in Donovan. I you know what? I feel better about Darius Garland after this last series than I did before. That he went out there and he tried to gut it out.
Oh,
I don't feel good about his size, but
yeah,
man.
I respected the hell out of that. My question is, will he ever hold up? And maybe 4 years from now, we're laughing at that when he's been to the NBA Finals and maybe helped hit shots to win a championship. We can all laugh at, you know, when Anthony back in May of 2025, all wrapped up in his emotions, wondered. And I bet you, by the way, there were people wondering about Steph Curry after all his ankle injury situations that plagued the early part of career. Was he ever going to be tough enough? Was he going to get picked on defense? And that's not to say that there's no doubt like Darius Garland is going to be the next Steph Curry, but there are genuine questions, and I wonder what the Cavs feel about this because they are banking a lot. If they are truly committed to keeping some of this core together, maybe not all of them, but if they're definitely committed to Donovan Mitchell, Evan Mobley, and Darius Garland, like, I bet there's some split internally on whether or not he's going to make it to the finish line.
Joining us right now on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline, Channing Frye, former Cleveland Cavalier, NBA champion, host of the Road Trippin' Pod. Channing, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
So I heard on Road Trippin', you were talking about the Cavs, and boy, yep. There's some strong opinions right there. Let me just ask you, are the days of Jared Allen numbered in Cleveland?
No, I don't think so. And again, I wasn't saying trade him. I wasn't saying any of that. But if you look at the series, just go watch the film. Like, I watch film with my kid. Like, when we watch the Cavs, like, as a team, you know, obviously they were injured. That was a big thing. And it's not just because of him, right? I know, obviously, this gets blown up, but he didn't have a good series. I can't remember where Jared Allen has had a good series when it was needed to be physical and dominant. And these are things that he can change. So you keep him, but you just have to have a real conversation. If Jared Allen was my teammate, I would have said the same thing to him. And I think, you know, people need to understand that, like, that's as nice as I was, as real as you have to be if you want to win a championship. Like, Richard Jefferson's my, you know, my brother. I've known him since I was 14. And, you know, even when we were winning, when I first got there for Orlando, he was like, Channing, you got to get in playoff shape. And he ran with me. And he was like, dude, you got to get better defensively and wouldn't make me play one-on-one. Like, these aren't things that are not fixable. But, like, as I said in that, in Road Tripping, it's not about just getting in the weight room. It's a mentality. Go watch the film. I think Jared Allen in that game didn't contest like five or six shots. Now, that might be minute. But to somebody that's really trying to win, when you're watching OKC dismantle Minnesota at times, did they not contest every single shot? Mm-hmm. So that sense of urgency is shown by championship teams. And I just didn't see it from a particular person who was healthy, knowing that the rest of his teammates weren't 100%. So that was my gripe.
Do you think there is at all a fit issue? Like, if you were to build a perfect player that is a match alongside in the front court Evan Mobley, who would that be? And can it be Jared Allen?
Oh, 100% it could be Jared Allen. 100%. I just think, again, it's what is he doing this summer to prepare? Like, if you get dogged out, I thought the Cavs were young. Remember 2-3 years ago they played the Knicks? They got dogged out physically, and the Knicks were literally laughing. You know, he had a very serious rib injury last year, and I know online I make jokes or whatever, but I do that all the time anyways. I just say ribby-wibby just because, you know, I got kids and I think it's funny. But when you're available – and you are somewhat near 100%, you got to lift your teammates up. If you see Darius Garland out there can barely move on a toe, I'm not asking for a series to average 40. I'm saying as an all-star, give me a game where they go, damn, you are invaluable to our team. And that's all I'm asking. Donovan Mitchell did it, I don't know how many times. Kenny Atkinson did it. I mean, you look at Evan Mobley and DeAndre Hunter and Darius Garland, you would say, okay, they're trying. They're out here. It's not 100%, but they're giving me what they got. And I want to just say that across the board for, you know, every player. And even Max Strus is like, dude, he tried. He just missed. It happens. Like, nobody's looking at that as a problem. But at least you can't practice non-makes or non-attempts, you know?
Channy Frye with us on the hotline. Great playoff perspective. So it's the perfect time then to ask you, because I am so confused about the NBA right now. I've always known that the playoffs, they're officiated differently. It does reward more toughness, more resilience. It's tougher to get by guys. With that said, how in the world are players like TJ McConnell, Alex Caruso, Mitchell Robinson, how are they becoming such premium playoff players when you watch them in the regular season? You're like, all right, those are nice guys to have, but there's so many other players I'd rather have.
To win a championship, to go far in the playoffs, you need three things, right? You need two players who are not afraid of the moment that are going to win you two games, right? You need a bench, and then you need a coach. So those four things equate to winning four games. Now, the Knicks are wildly talented up front, and Brunson takes over for the bench part. And so does Tibbs and his coaching in there, and it just because they play five and a half people, you know. But Mitchell Robinson has value because what Mitchell Robinson does defensively is he clogs lanes. He's long and lengthy, and they rebound the basketball. And in today's age, you need a rim roller. In most chances, you need somebody who can run to the rim, stop, and then jump. Even Josh Hart said, hey, like, you know, Mitchell Robinson isn't a dunk-it-on-the-run guy. Now, during the season, you're not going to see the value in TJ McConnell just because their scouting report is different. You don't have time playing every other day to go scout Wembanyama, have a game plan for him, and then a day after go scout Sengun, and then a day after go scout Jokic. It just doesn't work like that. You don't have enough time to practice. You don't have enough time to dive into details. So you have to use generalities, right? And so now in the playoffs, you get a guy like TJ McConnell to go, oh, how many minutes am I going to play? 26? 28? Oh, deal. I'm picking up full court. And everyone knows that I'm going to set the tone when I come in the game. Also, TJ is one of the toughest men I've ever met mentally. TJ isn't the fastest. He isn't the strongest. He isn't the most athletic. But the thing about TJ and Alex Caruso also, right, is that they are masters of the detail. And these suckers are the worst to play against. We would not have won if Matthew Dellavedova was not on our team in 2016, right? I wasn't on his team. Deli knew what you ate for breakfast. He knew your grandma's maiden name. He knew if you dribbled twice going right, you were going to cross over this way, and he wouldn't let you do it. And those guys don't let you do it. And I felt like Cleveland defensively as a team let Indiana just do whatever they want. Drive, kick, drive, kick, drive, kick. Like, Indiana never felt uncomfortable. And that was, you know, that's the biggest difference. And that's where the value comes.
On my podcast, Aspire with Emma Greed, we share the keys to succeed in business and in life. Listen to and follow Aspire with Emma Greed, an Odyssey podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.
Is who is that guy that's going to make things uncomfortable and make it more muddy? Because you can't just let a team like Indiana, New York, Minnesota go play basketball. Right? You got to muddy it up somehow.
Channing Frye, Road Trip and Podcast, joins us on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. So, in your eyes, I mean, Donovan Mitchell has 2 years left, then a player option. can the Cavs afford to run it back as is?
Oh, boy. That's a great question. I will put it this way. I'm looking around to see if I can get a defensive leader. I don't have that. Like, Evan Mobley is that, but I need somebody in the backcourt who is that, not the front court. So Evan Mobley is obviously defensive player of the year, is a effing ridiculous defensive talent. In the playoffs, you're going to wait. You're going to need to wait for him to get stronger and to be healthy. And, you know, you can rely on him, but you also need somebody that is like, this is my job. It's like OKC has three guys that literally their job is to make life miserable for opposing teams. When you can put somebody like Alex Caruso who comes off the bench or Hartenstein on Jokic, and obviously they're not necessarily going to stop him, but they make life miserable for him, it allows you to create opportunities, turnovers. So for me, they need a defensive juggernaut to really anchor this team next to Evan Mobley on that backcourt. And then secondly, they just need to have like a real film session and see how they need to, like, they got a, other than Donovan Mitchell, I just didn't think they wanted to settle for mid-range twos. And if you notice in the playoffs, the great teams, the teams that are still playing, they just take the best shot available, whether that's a midi, whether that's a three, whether that's attacking a rack. And then you have to take into consideration health. You know, Darius Garland was hurt, DeAndre Hunter was hurt, Evan Mobley was hurt. So, you know, you're monitoring, you're looking, but I would definitely not be afraid of constantly upgrading to match what's happening in the league right now. So, you know, if that was my job isn't to be loyal to the players, it's to be loyal to the Cavs and give us a chance to win another championship.
Well, you just hit on something with the mid-range game because, you know, I grew up, obviously, the end of the Jordan run and then Kobe. There was a lot of mid-range perfection, and that stuff mattered. And then, lo and behold, it's analytics, market inefficiencies, the Sloan Conference, threes and layups, and that's it. And we're on fast breaks, going to spot up in the corners. And that stuff dominates all regular season. The Cavs were as good as almost any team in NBA history doing that. Do you think this playoff experience, not just in Cleveland, but in Boston and other places, is going to force organizations to be able to play multiple different ways so that they're not, you know, caught with their pants down come playoff time?
So I think it's a mentality, right? I think you look at each year, each team that's won, they've had a guy or two that is not afraid of shooting that mid-range and can just get a bucket. Do you know what's better than 0 points? 2 points, right? It's hard to just get wide open threes with consistency in the playoffs. Teams are too locked in. They know your plays. They know your tendencies. They know your details. They know every little inch of your game and what you're trying to do. And so to me, I felt like, and this is what I was telling, my son, and he was like, man, these teams are shooting a lot of mid ranges or attacking the rack. Anthony Edwards is not afraid at all. Now, mind you, he's shooting more threes just because they're clogging the paint and they are not shooting very well this series. And I didn't think they shot very well last series. It was just, they just won. They're better defensively. And Julius Randle's a monster. So Julius Randle and Anthony Edwards are not afraid of shooting mid-ranges. Shai Gilgeous is definitely not afraid, and neither is Jalen Williams. Jalen Brunson lives in the mid-range, so does OG and Mikal Bridges. And then you look at the Pacers, Nembhard, Nesmith, Siakam, Halliburton, all them live in the mid-range. They don't mind mid-ranges, right? I think we fell in love, I think the NBA, sorry, I'm not we anymore, it's them. I think the analytics teams fell in love with threes because they aren't tough to get, right? It's like drive kick, swing, swing, or you get a wide open corner three. But in the playoffs, players are sprinting their butt off to close out on any of those threes. Also, passing is harder. Getting by your player is harder. So, like, these wide-open threes that people are selling for used to be closer to the three-point line. Now, you can go back and watch the film. Look at how far back some of these teams have to shoot to get an open shot sometimes. And it is amazing. And, yeah, I do think you need a player. Your star player has to be efficient on all three levels. This is the skill era, right? And we can say that because there's no real superstar teams that have dominated over the last 7 years. It's been who's been healthy, whose skill level is ready, and who is physically and emotionally committed to their game plan and to each other. And these four teams this year especially, our chemistry is great. They're men. They're physically dominant, both on the offensive defensive side, and they have guys that are proficient on all three levels.
Seven champions in 7 years after this season. What does that mean to you for the NBA? Is that going to end up over time being a good thing or a bad thing?
I think it's a great thing because, you know what, all these complaints for people who really don't watch basketball or people who became politically charged about basketball, they just say things that they're repeating from people on TV who don't watch basketball. It's all that is threes and layups and fouls. It's not that at all. I think you look at, like, when I was playing basketball, for the Suns in 2010, we were second or third in the league, and we shot 28 to 32 threes a game, right? And that was so much. And everyone was like, you're shooting too many. You look at the average team right now, and they shoot about 40, right? 43s a game is actually not that bad for the skill level of who's playing today. Now, what everyone sees is the best team in the NBA, which was the Boston Celtics, who has eight players that shoot above 35% from the three-point line. And that is their style. There have been teams, Golden State shoots a lot of threes. They don't make them, but they shoot them. Right? You look across the league, and there are more teams that don't shoot as much than there are these teams that shoot the 50-60 threes. I think for me, the parity is great. It shows you can win different ways. Like, Indiana does not play like New York, and Minnesota for sure does not play like OKC. But the fact that Minnesota can trade Carl Anthony Towns away, right? A 7-foot spread big man, and he'd be just as good as Julius Randle, who basically took all of last year off. And both of those teams work. I mean, it's amazing. Look at Indiana. Like, nobody would have thought Indiana would make it here again, which is crazy, right? Look what they built. Tyrese Halliburton is the most unsuspecting star in our league. He'll give you a game where he has 4 points and they win by 16, or he'll have 40 and make the game-winning shot at the end of the game over a defensive player of the year. And so, you know, and then the Knicks, you look at Brunson and what they've done of really just going all out for their starting unit and saying our five can beat any of your seven, and it's worked. And so for me, it's about coaching. It's about energy. It's about, like, you know, obviously having star power. And you have physically dominant defensive and offensive players that are very skilled on all three levels.
Channing, we thank you very much for the time. All the best, and we hope to run you down again soon. Thank you.
Yeah, man. Thank you.
That's Channing Frye with us just moments ago. 92.3thefan.com is where you can find that interview. He was on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. He's one of the hosts of the Road Tripping Podcast with he and Richard Jefferson. What do you think of those words that he said about Jared Allen? He was definitely a little less, I'll say angry, seemed a little less angry.
On my podcast, Aspire with Emma Greed, we share the keys to succeed in business and in life. Listen to and follow Aspire with Emma Greed and Odyssey podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
Angry there. He was more just kind of seeing it out. But you can tell, man, from both in his pod and in this interview with us yesterday or today, Channing Frye is frustrated with Jared Allen.
He is, but I'm trying. He's not wrong about anything he said.
Uh-huh.
And certainly we saw like the one-on-one matchups anytime Halliburton attacked him. But, you know, I try to take a broader view of this. Jared Allen is your fourth best player.
Correct.
And at times this year.
Fifth. Ty was ahead of him at most points.
I would have to say Ty was probably ahead of him for most of the year. Normally, your fourth or fifth best player playing poorly isn't the reason that you can't make it past the second round of the playoffs.
Owen.
Well, I agree with that, so that kind of changes what I was about to say. But I do think that Channing Frye sees a lot of himself in the role that Jared Allen takes on, right? They play the same position. We're both kind of more slender big men.
He's not a shooter.
And I think Channing feels like he was a more physical presence than what Jared Allen is.
Yeah, well, he's
and not, so he just...
He's not wrong.
Yeah.
Okay, he's not wrong. Jared does some things very, very well. In fact, it allows Evan Mobley to go out and defend guys, sometimes on the wing, and creates a lot of their havoc defensively where teams will try to drive to the paint. Oh, no, Jared Allen's there. We're going to throw it out to the three-point line. Oh, my God, a pterodactyl is coming out with these long arms to try to block a shot. And it's creating chaos and confusion, and before you know it, they can't get a shot off.
Mm-hmm.
That happens all regular season. In the playoffs, obviously, everything kind of tightens up anyway. But as much as they might be a really good fit defensively at times, offensively, you know, Evan can shoot the three, can space things out a little bit, but his game is not there where you're going to have him just sit out there and take as many threes as he wants until they come out and guard him. He's still not there, right? He's not truly going to punish teams for not guarding him at the three-point line yet. And so what they need is another big man that can do some of the stuff you're talking about, that Channing could do, that Miles Turner, if you watched him last night, that he could do. Certainly we know Karl Anthony Towns, he wants to shoot it from 30 feet. You know, that's not the type of player Jared Allen is.
Well, if I go back to the fourth best player comment. Who's the second best player? Is it Evan?
This year, I think it was interchangeable for the first 3 months. I thought any given week you could say that was a Donovan week. That was a Darius week. Darius was clutch.
Hey, I know we're going to have Jim Orsarski on from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel at 9:20. That might be a quick conversation then. Because if it's interchangeable, then I can give you an argument. Wait a minute. Just keep the core four. Because if it's gone from Darius is clear number two to now it's interchangeable with an Evan Mobley, if you're saying it's like, well, he'll definitely be the second best player, maybe interchangeable with the first best player next year. Like
the regular season doesn't matter anymore.
No, the regular season is
it didn't matter to some this year.
Honestly, you got to use it the right way, and none of us wanted to see it the right way because we were having so much fun during the regular season because they were all beat downs. You won 64 games. You know what this has to be next year is a tune-up. It has to be an 82-game tune-up. I don't give a damn about where they're seeded next year. We wanted the number one seed. We played with seedings before with 4 or 5. We played with seedings a little bit this year, but we wanted number one. I don't know if it matters. I really don't know. Like, yeah, I'd like to be in the top four, certainly, but I think it's much more important to have these guys ready for the postseason.
Well, how about what Channing said about one of the main differences between regular season where all it is run to that three-point line and shoot threes. And if you can't get that, then go inside for a layup. And if you can do that, then maybe kick it back out for a wide-open three. That stuff's not available in the playoffs to the same extent. And he brought up the mid-range game. And I know, too, LeBron on his podcast recently, Steve Nash, was talking about the return of the mid-range game. Who on the Cavs, when stuff gets really, really tough, who can create those looks around the mid-range? Well, one guy in particular we know, Donovan Mitchell. He's got every tool in his arsenal. Who's another guy who could come in when they run you off that three-point line that can still get two when it's needed? Which, as Channing said, it's more than zero.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't treated it like that in many years. We have thought with the Golden State Warriors, with the Daryl Morey Houston Rockets, it was just, those are bad shots. Mid-range game, bad shots. Maybe not so fast on that come playoff time, because sometimes those are the only shots available.
Here's Channing Frye.
I think it's a great thing. It shows you can win different ways. Like, Indiana does not play like New York, and Minnesota for sure does not play like OKC. But the fact that Minnesota can trade Karl-Anthony Towns away and he be just as good as Julius Randle, who basically took all of last year off. I mean, it's amazing. Look at Indiana. Like, nobody would have thought Indiana would make it here again. Look what they built. Tyrese Halliburton is the most unsuspecting star in our league. He'll give you a game where he has 4 points and they win by 16, or he'll have 40 and make the game-winning shot at the end of the game over a defensive player of the year. And so, you know, and then the next, you look at Brunson and what they've done of really just going all out for their starting unit and saying our five can beat any of your seven, and it's worked. It's about coaching. It's about energy. So you have a star power, and you have physically dominant defensive and offensive players that are very skilled on all three levels.
So what you're trying to do is, if you can't make a move, which I think a lot of people want to make a move, but I don't know how capable it is. So I think right now the highest likelihood is that you keep this team intact for the most part. I think it then becomes something, Anthony, where can you diversify the game? Can you get these guys to trust each other? Because, boy, I mean, they will shoot the bleep out of it from long range. But there are nights that they were cold. And I would justify things and go, well, you know, so-and-so isn't going to be that hot every night against us, and we're not going to be that cold every night. Usually, you kind of go back to what you are. Cavs are a good three-point shooting team. The other team might not be as good. But if you have a team like Indiana, and I said that at the beginning of the series against Indiana, if you go back to a team like Indiana, okay, there's some diversification there. They can do other things, because I think that the team is talented. The Cavs are talented, but they are proving to everybody that there is a way to stop that talent. Whereas for other teams, they still have something else in their repertoire that they can work with, that they're comfortable with, because I think it's about knocking people off where they're comfortable, where they get comfortable, and 82 games is a long time to get comfortable with something. And if you can knock them off that comfort, then you are going to have an advantage. But it's about being able to bounce back and answer that. And I think Evan Mobley can find a mid-range. Already has a mid-range game. I think that these other guys can certainly find a mid-range game. Like, I'm going to have to come to the terms here that a big move is still unlikely. So I got to look at what's best or what I can fix with this group right now. So I know we've been saying a lot of stuff about Darius and about Jared Allen especially. But there's some things that you might not be able to just change out right now. Or you might have to wait until February to do something like that. Rich and Avon, you're first up on the Fan.
Hey, good morning, gentlemen. How are you?
Morning, Rich. We're doing well. Go ahead.
Yeah, that was a great interview, by the way.
Thank you.
Real quick on Jared Allen. On Jared Allen, you guys made the comment he's the fourth or fifth best player on the team, so you can't blame him necessarily for the loss. I view Jared Allen, you got to look at him on the defensive side of the floor. After Evan, he's the second best player on this team. And most would say he's an elite rim protector. And he's a valuable player, but Jared didn't play up to his potential. A lot of times guys who their personality off the floor is who they are on the floor. And it's hard to change that. That's just who he is. And doesn't make him a bad guy or not valuable or anything like that. But I just see Jared continuously really doesn't have the intensity when the Cavs need him most. So that's just my thoughts. Great interview. Keep up the good work.
Rich, thank you very much for the call. I think he has a desire. I think that he has a wanting, but is he able to burst through that? I'm not sure if he does. And right now, we only have a short amount of time to be able to prove something like that.
On my podcast, Aspire with Emma Greed, we share the keys to succeed in business and in life. Listen to and follow Aspire with Emma Greed and Odyssey Podcast wherever you get your podcasts.